Hi, and welcome to the American Male Spouse. I'm your host, Elizabeth Smith. This week's topic is not a light one. When Paige came to me and offered to share her story, I was both honored and quite honestly nervous. Paige is going through a divorce, and there's just nothing light and breezy about that. This isn't necessarily a topic that we want to think about, but it is a difficult reality for some, and unfortunately, I think many of us know someone who's been in a similar situation. Paige does a really beautiful job of shedding light on her experience, and I believe she can really help all of us understand more about what this looks like and how to love people that are going through similar trials. It's natural to hear a story like this and feel sympathy for Paige, but I think that after hearing more from her, more than anything, you're going to feel admiration for her strength, her composure, and her resilience. Her perspective is pretty mind-blowing to me, and I'm honored that she came to me to share her story.
Okay, so I always start this out with just having you tell me about yourself. I was thinking so much about, like, there's so many things that I want to say to you personally, just as your friend, and because I care about you and I love you and I hate this whole situation for you, but I also don't want to do so in a way that then lets you not share it in another capacity. So I want to dive into, like, the officialness of the questions, and then we can chat as friends and do whatever we need to do. But with all that said, if you want to just, well, before you even start, I know I told you this already, but I think you're amazing, and I am honored that you're willing to share your story with me, because I know it's not a simple one. I know that it's not the most typical story, I would say, to downplay it in the most downplayed way possible. And with that said, I'm just honored that you're willing to share it. I know that you're not the only person who, unfortunately, has been through a situation like this. So, well, maybe it's not the majority, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be really impacted by your voice. And so I just appreciate you.
I think that's kind of what's important about it too, because then a lot of times when, especially when I was in the community, like, you get wrapped up in the lifestyle, and it's important to remember that it's not the same for everybody. And, you know, everyone's story, no matter how much you try to make it, you know, happily ever after, life is messy, and, you know, families are messy. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the military spouse lifestyle too, is that it's messy.
That's the truth. Yeah. And with that, and without telling your own story for you too much, why don't you go ahead and just tell me your name, a little bit about yourself. We'll jump in.
So I'm Paige. I am 33 years old. I'm a now single mom of two kids. They are 4 and 2, and they are the loves of my life. I met my now estranged husband back in 2012. We got married in 2014. After about, like, 6 months of dating, we got engaged, and then we were married a year and a half after the engagement. So engaged after 6 months. Married at, like, a year and a half mark. And as far as my background, I was working full time when I met my husband, had my own career, I owned my own house, definitely had my own goals and everything. And then, as you all know, like, with the military lifestyle, a lot of times your personal career and aspirations kind of go on the back burner once you're in this kind of community. You have to, you know, typically take a back seat or adjust your roles because you're moving every 3 years. So it can't be, you know, the life that you envisioned, but it's a sacrifice that obviously we're all willing to make and to do for our family and for the people that we love. So moved in with him after we got married. He deployed within 4 months after our marriage.
Oh, wow.
And then was gone for 6 months. And then he was home for 3 days when we found out that we were getting our new assignment, and that that assignment would be deploying within 4 months. So he was only home for a total of 4 months before he deployed again. In that 4 months, we got pregnant with our son. And so I stayed behind and continued to work full-time even after he moved and deployed. And then after that deployment, we PCS'd to the new assignment, the squadron that he was already in. And then we had our son, and then we were at that assignment where I met you. And then we moved back to my hometown for the next PCS. And then I found out that we were surprise pregnant with our second. So for that entire time that we were PCS'd, I didn't work. Then I was a stay-at-home mom. So, you know, that was a sacrifice to go from being career person to stay-at-home mom. That's a huge life adjustment on its own. And not only are you doing that for the first time, you're away thousands of miles away from your family, and you have to make the friends that are family, and just kind of readjusting to a whole brand new lifestyle. So with that, you know, there's definitely some strain that can go on a marriage and a relationship when there's huge dynamic shift.
Sure, because you left your full-time career and essentially your hometown at the same time, right?
Yep. Okay. Yep. All of my friends, family, all of that. But it was one of those things where you make the best of it and sure. you learn, you know, the new normal, and you're doing it for the sake of the person that you love's career and for your family, and you make those sacrifices just like they make sacrifices. And you go through that whole Christ internal turmoil and the crisis of what is my purpose? And is this my role now? Is this who I am? All those questions that every mom asks of themselves, whether they're a stay-at-home mom or if they're a working mom, if they're doing the right thing. It's a hard pill to swallow when you go from being completely independent to being completely dependent on someone. So from my thoughts, you know, I thought we were making the best of it. With him being gone a lot, there was a lot of times where communication kind of could have been better, but I thought we were still in a pretty good place. And as far as being stable, there were no major concerns. It was just the run-of-the-mill stuff that you would think of anytime your husband is deployed or goes TDY. You just are working through those issues. At least that was my perspective on it. And then we moved back here to North Carolina. I interviewed for a job and accepted a position while we were PCSing on the road. So all of that, got a job. And when we got here, I realized that I was pregnant with my daughter. So I started my full-time career again. this time pregnant, and by the time that I had her, I switched to part-time with the organization so that I could kind of get a healthy balance of being in the working world and being a parent, and that seemed to be going fairly well for us. And then he deployed for a third time before my daughter turned one, and on that deployment for a shorter time span, still thought we were doing pretty well. There were some issues for sure, but not anything that I would deem as major. We were in counseling at that point for some stuff, but in my mind, it was things that we could work through.
Okay.
And unfortunately, on the last appointment, he had an affair, and I did not find out about it until 8 months after he was at home. Things kind of started to go downhill pretty drastically. He was, in my opinion, kind of disconnecting from the family. He always worked late, so to me, that was no different than any other time. What I didn't know is that some of those nights he was not working late. He was with his friend. And unfortunately, it was someone that he was deployed with. So it was somebody else in the fighter community, which, you know, is always a concern of most of us when our husbands are gone so often. And it's such a close-knit community. It's just one of those things that you always kind of hope doesn't happen to you or to your family, but it's always in the back of your mind, like the what ifs and things like that. And you always pray that your relationship is stronger than those things. But in my case, unfortunately, it was not strong enough for that. So yeah, came home the one time I ever went through my husband's phone is when I found the text messages from the other woman that was in the squadron with him. And so I immediately, you always kind of, I don't know if you've ever done this, but like you always kind of try to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and be like, I don't know what I would have done if that were me. And you always, you know, you hear, I mean, I'm not the first person whose husband's been unfaithful. So you think about these things and you're like, what would I do in that situation? Like, how would I react? Would I like immediately murder them? Am I going to be on 48 hours? Like, is this the way that it goes?
Yes, I can absolutely relate, because when we talked about this, I told Kyle exactly what I would do. I got, that was the first thing maybe that I did when, after hearing about it, was think about my reaction and think about exactly what I would do. And of course, what you think about and what you say you're going to do, I'm sure, entirely different from perhaps what you actually do.
And so it's really what, it's so wild to think about now looking back on it, because like in that moment, I was angry naturally. Like I remember just holding the phone and just shaking. Like, and I remember as soon as I saw all of that, the first thing I remember saying to myself is, I'm getting a divorce. And like, it came out so matter of fact, like I had just said, we're out of peanut butter. Like, and I just remember thinking to myself, okay, like, this is it. I'm getting a divorce. And, you know, it was one of those things where I was angry, I was upset, I was hurt, but I was also like, okay, this is what I immediately went into kind of action mode. And what I did not go to sleep that night. He was asleep. And I returned his phone to him after I'd seen everything that I needed to see and then some. And he was asleep. I went downstairs. I fixed a glass of wine. And by glass, I mean bottle. I went and I immediately changed like my direct deposit for work. I moved money over into like a new account. And then I watched Hope Floats on Amazon at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm just drinking my wine, watching Hope Float. Wow. And the interesting thing is I did not confront him for a week.
Oh my gosh, really?
Or I told him I knew what I knew, because I knew that I needed to make sure that I was making the smartest decisions, the most rational decisions possible for my kids. And part of that was making sure that I had all of my ducks in a row to leave him. Because as a mom who, you know, I was working part-time. I still am. And this is in the middle of COVID.
Right.
So like, I've got to make sure that I do this smart and I do this the right way and I do this the best way for me. And if I react with emotion, then I lose my advantage. So,
wow. I'm so impressed by that composure and that presence of mind. That is, I have literal goosebumps that you explain it that way, because that's, do you think that was a mama bear sort of instinct kicking over there that gave you that sense of calm and that sense of, I mean, I suppose
it's hard to say, because you always just kind of wonder what your reaction was going to be.
Right.
My reaction was immediate action, and I was like, I need to do what's best, not react emotionally, but wow. react rationally. And anybody will tell you this, even my husband will tell you that I'm an emotional person. I'm a wave reaction through and through. Like, I don't always react logically. I usually react off of emotion. So for me to just completely flip that and do it so efficiently, let me know that, like, in true moments of crisis, this is what I do. And
right.
this is who I am. And if there's any silver lining, you know, any takeaways from this is that I've learned something so valuable about myself.
Right. The obvious ability that you have to take care of yourself and your family, given an absolute nightmare situation, is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It really showed me, you know, who I am. And so what I basically did was I knew the next day, based off what I'd read from that text, the text messages that night, was that he was supposed to be going into work, was the story that I heard, but I knew that he was planning on meeting up with her. So that morning I said, you know, I can tell something's been going on with you. You know, your wife, I love you. I'd really like to talk about this and see if we can work through what's going on with you. But I wish you would talk to me. And, you know, it was basically gaslighting. Nothing's going on. It's just COVID. Everything is fine. It's just work stress, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, well, I don't really think that's it. But, you know, I'm here if you want to talk to me. I love you. And the response, you know, was, okay, well, he left the house. And I said, hey, I love you. And he said, love you too. And then when he left the house, I immediately called a lawyer to start the process of separation. And that night, this is actually kind of funny, that night he came home and it was late. And I was like, how was your day? And he was like, good, good. I said, I bet. I was like, sounds like it was pretty busy. And I knew where he had been. And I said, you know, this morning when I asked you if something's going on, like I feel like you weren't being truthful. And he was like, well, do you really want to know what's going on? And I said, well, absolutely. I really want to know what's going on. And he looked right at me and he said, well, I've started dipping. I looked at him and I said, into what?
Stop.
Yeah, he looked right at me and I was like, well, what have you been dipping into? And he said, I mean, chewing tobacco. And I said, well, you know what? If that's what makes you happy, you knock yourself out.
Oh my
And I went to
God.
Bed.
You are not serious.
Yes, I'm dead serious. That, and then I was like, okay, well, at least I know I haven't lost my sense of humor in all of this.
another pat on the back for yourself, if nothing else. Good grief. I cannot get my head around that. Holy cow.
Yep.
That's pathological. I mean, that's crazy, you know, that he, and you wonder, I mean, there's no point in wasting your time thinking about it, but you wonder, did he have that ready? Did he just pull that out of his back pocket?
Yeah.
I mean,
he had all these things ready.
Okay.
And I know that because I had never met his mistress until the Christmas party, the squadron Christmas party. We got there and I introduced myself to her and she just looked at me really mean. And I was like, this is an odd ring from somebody that I've never met before. And then after that, like the whole evening, I watched her watch him. And this is before I knew anything. And whenever I would walk away, she would walk up to him. And whenever I would come back to join him, she would scurry away. And I was like, something's off. And that night, and I think she said something else really kind of mean to me that night. And I just remember thinking, like, this is a really rude comment from somebody that does not know me and that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, I remember going home and getting in bed and being like, so what's the deal with this girl? And he was like, oh, I didn't notice that. it was definitely he kind of like distracted with another topic and I dropped it, but in the pit of my stomach I was like, something is wrong here. And then that kind of around the same time he started acting significantly differently at home. I remember right after that Christmas, we were on like a day date and we were with his family on a vacation. His family had a kid, so we're out on a day date. And we're driving in the car and I look over and I'm like, okay, well, you know, with everything that's going on, you know, this would be a really good time to kind of pulse check our relationship and have a cute moment, right? To reconnect.
Sure.
And I was like, hey, I was like, if you could do it all over again, would you marry me? And there's this long pause. And the answer is, I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
And it just was an immediate gut punch to me. And I was just like, I can't believe that after 6 years together, that is his answer. I don't know. Two kids, three deployments. And the answer is, I don't know. And
did he elaborate at that point any as to why he didn't know?
He said that our communication was an issue. And looking back on it now, in the moment, I was thinking of all the ways that I could be a better wife. I'm like, I've already sacrificed so much. I want to talk to you about your day when you get home from work, but you don't want to talk about your day. I want to talk about our relationship, and there's always an excuse why we can't because you're too tired or it's not the right time of day. And I was just in that moment thinking, what else can I possibly do to be a better wife? And I was so distraught by it because I'm like, I do all the cooking. I do all the cleaning. I do 98% of the child rearing because of the hours that you work. And on top of that, I'm also working. What else am I doing that I'm not providing to you, you know?
Wow.
And it's like, here I am trying to have conversations about our relationship and to make it stronger. And the response that I get from this is, I don't know if right. I would marry you again.
And the fact that you, which understandably so, unfortunately, I think most of us would, but the fact that you put that on yourself and what more you could do when the reality is that, correct me if I'm wrong in the timeline, but that he's already
right
gone.
Yeah. Yeah. He was already gone. Here I am, you know, calling counselors. So then we start marriage counseling because after that you're like, okay, well, let's see what else I can do. Let's pull up the boots and get into this because, mm-hmm. you know, we both come from families that are not of divorce. So my parents were happily married for 32 years. His parents were happily married for 30 some odd years. This was not even an option on the table in my mind. Like mm-hmm. when you get married, it's forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not at all. You work through it. If there's a problem, you fix it. What I didn't realize is that I was the only one trying to fix the problem at that
right.
time. And that there was nothing. Look, now that you know, hindsight's always 20/20 and it's always clear. And I'm not saying that I was a perfect wife, but I didn't do anything wrong. And that's the thing that I had to struggle with for a while is here I am sitting in this wondering what more do I have to offer? What am I doing wrong that he's not happy? And it was plaguing me. It was making me physically sick to think that I'm not enough. No matter what I do, I'm not enough.
That just absolutely breaks my heart for you.
Yeah. And for months, that was in December. So January, February, March, we were in counseling. And then COVID happens. And then May is when I found out about the affair and that it had been going on since October. So a huge chunk of time, I'm sitting here working on our marriage, and I equate it to the boat was sinking. I'm dumping the water out and he's adding water to it.
Sure.
And there was nothing, looking back on it now, there was absolutely nothing that I could have done to change him or to make him not do what he did. I think he was well on his way based off other things that happened in our marriage earlier on. He was on his way. This was his track. I'm the type of woman where I will give you the benefit of the doubt until I absolutely can't do it any longer. And that's what I did with our marriage.
I think in general, when you love somebody, from my own perspective, and what I, again, this is complete assumption based on who I like to think I would be, but when you love someone, there's also a certain degree of yourself that's reflected in that choice. So I feel like nobody wants to assume the worst in their partner, because that's the person that you chose and that's the person you love. And like you said, the person that you sacrificed for and have children with. Yeah. And so it's absolutely heartbreaking that you went through that and you thought those things, but I completely understand it too, because you are such a smart, capable person who is not going to assume that they wouldn't see these things, who's not going to assume that they're being naive. And so I'm grateful to hear you say what you are now in terms of the way that you've gained that perspective.
And, you know, all of this comes with time apart, right? So when you're in it, you're just trying to save the ship. But when you finally say, okay, time of death, and you move away, it makes everything so much more clear. And all those red flags, when you're wearing rose-colored glasses, all the flags are red, right? So when you take them off, you can really see what it is, everything for what it is. And
yeah, and you can see it, and you can see who you are on your own too. You can see your own strengths. And you can see what you can survive, and you can recognize what you don't have to tolerate.
Yeah. And I remember, like, the day I left, I was so calm about it. You know, he woke up and he seemed different, and I asked him what was wrong. And he was like, I'm just really stressed right now. And I said, oh, is it work? And he's like, no, it's not work. I said, oh, is it the kids? Because he had to watch the kids a little while that week, unbeknownst to him, so that I could go to a lawyer. The only time I ever lied to my husband was that instance where I said I had to go into work, but I was really going to a lawyer. But you know what? At the time, serves him right. So I was like, oh, is it the stress of watching your children? And he was like, no. I was like, oh, so it's me. He's like, yeah. He said, I accidentally saw your credit card purchase for the lawyer retainer fee. And I was like, okay, well, it's exactly what you think it is, and I'm leaving you. I was like, you know, we'll talk about this after I take the kids to my mom's house. And I came back and I confronted him. I said, I know everything. I've already got a lawyer. He's drawing up the separation paperwork. We're done here. I know about your mistress. I had a general idea about how long it had been going on, but he did provide me with specifics at that point, at least from what I gather is all the specifics that I have. And then it turns out pretty much for our entire marriage, he was unfaithful in one way or another. So unfortunately for this girl, she was not special. But I remember being so calm when it happened. And I remember, it's one of those things where, like, I wish I hadn't memorized every word of their conversations, but when it's your husband and another woman, it never leaves you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know every word that was said between them. And one of the things that stuck out to me was that she used the phrase, I think that you've settled. And it lit a fire in me that I cannot describe. I was like, he settled for me. And all I could think about is, I have a master's degree. I have certifications out the yin yang. I have put aside everything for this man and for him to think that raising his children, sacrificing my own career, and devoting myself entirely to him and his career is in any way, shape, or form me settling is beyond me. And I remember looking at him and I said, you and her seem to be under the impression that you settled for me. I said, so let's be very clear about this. I was like, you absolutely settled. I said, but you settled for a lifetime of women like this woman. I said, you've settled for a lifetime of loneliness and regret for the decisions that you've made. I said, but the one thing you did not settle on was me. Yeah. And I was like, absolutely not. You will not. I'm not less than she is. I said, she will never be a tenth of the woman that I am. She will never have the substance that I have. And I said, and in times like this, I guarantee you, she wouldn't be able to hold a candle to me. I was like, so before I leave, this we need to be clear on. You are the one, sir, that settled. You know,
your composure in these situations absolutely blows me away. How do you maintain that composure? Have you always maintained it? Have you always maintained it with him? How do you do that?
I try to. So it would be nice to be able to say all the things that I want to say to both of them. But at the end of the day, I think the thing that really keeps my composure is the fact that I'm a mom and I have to set an example for my kids. And at the end of the day, my children are 50% this man. And no matter what I feel inside, I cannot vocalize that because it would be detrimental to my children. So for me, I have to maintain that relationship and that rapport with him in some way that's positive. Something positive has to come out of this, and it has to be directed towards the kids. There's something good that can come out of any situation. And for me, it was knowing what exactly I'm made out of. No, I don't need anyone to be that person for me. Like, you kind of get into this role when you're completely dependent upon another human. You question everything. You wonder what your value and your worth is. And to a certain degree, I kind of have to thank him for this, because I had gotten to the place where I'd forgotten who I was. Mm. And the moment I read all of those text messages, I remembered exactly who I was, and that I was not this woman. I would not cower. I would not ignore this. He was going to know exactly who it was that he married, because he forgot. And unfortunately, it's too late for him and I, but he can remember this point forward, that this is not how you treat someone that you love and respect. And one way or another, I got a little bit of me back that I'd lost in this lifestyle and that I'd let fall to the wayside. And I remember one time he came over and he recently was trying to, you know, to apologize for the things that had happened. And I just looked at him and I said, let me stop you right there. I was like, I appreciate your apology. It's better late than never, but we're good. Like, just learn from this next time. I'm happy. I know who I am. I'm going to figure this out. I'm a survivor. This is a momentary low, but there's a lesson learned from that. And there's always a takeaway in life. And if anything, the silver lining from this is that I'm thankful that this happened to me, because at the end of the day, it made me realize who I am and what I'm capable of. And had this not happened, I never would have known how I would react in such stressful situations. I never would have known that it's okay no matter what the odds are. So even if you have to completely start over, and you know what, you do have to move into your childhood home. You do have to move your kids and start a new life, you do have to look for that job in the middle of a pandemic. But you know what? You don't have to put up with that. You don't have to put up with disrespect. You don't have to put up with a lifetime of mediocrity. There's always that option to say enough is enough. And this is who I am, and this is the example that I'm setting for my children. And that is, you don't have the right to treat me this way.
Mm-hmm. That's so powerful. And I have nothing but respect for, I already loved and respected you, but hearing more about the way that you've handled this is incredible. And as much as, of course, no one would ever wish something like this on someone else, I feel like your example here is the example. This is the blueprint that, God forbid, anyone have to follow. You have done so with class and a protection for yourself and your children that I just could not possibly respect more. And I'm just proud of you.
Thanks. It's definitely a steep learning curve, and I don't necessarily recommend it, but it's definitely something. There's a positive in every experience in life. And you know, like Dolly Parton says, if you know you want the rainbow, you got to put up with the rain. So it's one of those things where you just have to deal with the cards that you're handed, and you make that lemonade, right? And
sure.
You set that example for your kids, because at the end of the day, my takeaway from this with my children is that one day my husband's going to have to explain to them what he did.
Mm.
It's not my place to do it. It's his job.
Mm-hmm.
And when that day comes, I want my children to be like, I'm proud of my mom, because she said enough is enough and she left. And it was scary and it was hard, but she knew that she deserved to be loved by someone who legitimately loved her back.
Mm-hmm.
And appreciated the things that she did. You know, it's one of those things where it's not the most optimal way for sure, but the end result is still the same, and that is a happier life. So yeah. And with that, you know, alimony does make life a little bit happier.
Oh my gosh, your sense of humor in this is probably one of my favorite things. But along the lines of that, I know you kind of mentioned, obviously, who you want your kids to have seen you in this experience. Can you just tell me more about how you would want them to describe their mom?
Resilient, hopefully intelligent. I don't know. I fear the day in which my son brings home math homework, so I'll get back to you on intelligent. But resilient and tough and loving. I've always put my children first. Even now, you know, looking for full-time jobs, I'm like, okay, which one's the most mom-friendly role? Which one, mm-hmm. you know, is there a remote work option with this? Like, how flexible are the hours? Because guess what? I don't have backup.
Right.
And, you know, that's a familiar song and dance to anybody in the military, regardless of your circumstances, if you're married or not. We all know that, you know, the spouses are the ones that are doing the majority, you know, of the solo stuff, because for sure. months out of the year, it's all on you.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference now is that mine doesn't necessarily have an end in sight.
Right.
But it has prepared me for this role.
Sure. So moving on, can you tell me about a fellow military spouse that changed you or impacted you in a positive way?
Oh, just one? My goodness. Well, everyone that I've met has added some value to that experience. But as you all know, you always meet that one person that just you connect with on like a deeper level, and it's just almost instantaneous best friends. You're of the same mind and body and your spirit animals.
Mm-hmm.
So my girlfriend Rachel has definitely helped me get through some really, really tough times, and I hope vice versa, especially with raising small children
mm-hmm.
Away from from the families and that whole network, just having that person that you can rely on. Everybody has that person, especially in this network. We all like to think that we're there for each other through thick and thin, and you know, some just really rise above that, and it speaks volumes to character. And she has always been that person for me, even after, you know, being at different bases. And with me now kind of transitioning out of this lifestyle, sure. She's always just there for me, because it's really interesting to go from knowing nothing about the military to learning everything that you have to learn about it, and then all of a sudden transitioning back out of it again.
True. It's very true.
The relationships last forever, but I am kind of glad that I don't have to move anymore, to be honest with you. But yeah, she's definitely my spirit animal.
Yeah, I can absolutely see where that connection would be too, because she's just such an equally smart, strong woman. And I, even just over social media and kind of following the two of you, I love your friendship, and you can clearly see that love that you two have for each other.
Oh yeah, she's my sister from a sister.
All right, so our next little portion here is the rapid fire section. These are... Okay. Easy breezy questions. So, first one is your favorite junk food.
Favorite junk food, potato chips.
Favorite book.
That would be actually Atlas Shrugged. It's really great. I almost actually named my daughter's name is Lorelai, but I almost named her Dagny.
Okay.
It got food. So,
yeah. Lorelai was second place name for Cecilia. She was very nearly Lorelai. What is your favorite guilty pleasure?
Telling my kids that there's no more ice cream and then eating the ice cream after they go to bed.
Yeah. It's amazing, that line that I feel I can walk with my children, where I have such trepidation about lying to them about the ways of the world, or we were outside and there was a dead worm, and I struggled with how to tell them about this worm that died. I felt like I couldn't lie to them, but I didn't want to tell them about death. And it's just like all these things where I can be so in my mind, so considerate and this noble person who can then absolutely turn around and be like, our TV doesn't get blippy anymore and my phone's dead and we don't have any M&Ms. All of which are untrue. Okay, tell me one word to describe yourself.
I like to think funny.
I would agree. That's it?
No.
Well, first of all, is there anything that we didn't touch on, anything that you wanted to address or discuss?
I would just probably say that if someone is going through a similar situation, it's okay to break down. It's okay to be sad and to mourn the loss of your marriage. I don't want anyone to be under the impression that I did not do that. I just had to wait until my kids were fine and I was fine to be able to do that. As soon as I left the house and I knew that I was starting a new life, and that, you know, the separation paperwork was drawn up and everything was taken care of, all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed, that's when I had my moment to mourn. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's how you have to do it. I went from like almost 120 pounds to 95 within about a 3-week window. I had to have the help from doctors and friends and family, like making me eat. And you never know how you're going to deal with overwhelming sadness. And I akin divorce in a lot of ways to death, because the person that you thought that you were married to either didn't exist or died on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And based on kind of the things that, you know, you always go into it and you're like, why did you do this? Did you love her? And the answer was, of course not. I don't love her. It just happened because she was available. And it sends you into this tailspin. And I said, you know, did you ever love me? And he said, I don't think so. And wow. To hear those words, obviously, after doing so much, it's devastating. So if anybody out there hears words like that, just know that you're worth something. And it's not your fault that the person you're with didn't value you. And it's okay to be sad. It's okay to mourn. But the goal is to not let it consume you. Don't ever think that you're better off dead. Don't ever think that you're better off, you know, if you just didn't exist. Because your purpose and your value is somewhere. It may not be with the person that you thought you would be with. It may not look like your fairy tale ending. But you matter, and someone out there is going to value you. Someone out there is going to see you for exactly what you're worth. And it's not your job to make another human happy with himself. And at the end of the day, there's nothing that I could have done to make him happy with himself. There's nothing his mistress can do to make him happy with himself. It's on him. And so don't ever let that take away from your value as a human being and what you have to offer the world just because somebody else doesn't see that.
Mm-hmm. You are an incredible human being, and I am immensely sorry that this was the process that you had to go through, and I would never ever wish that on anyone in the world, but I'm also so happy to just hear you happy and to hear about the strength that you found in yourself and the you that you found again. And I'm grateful that you have shared your voice with us. And like you said, with unfortunately people that may go through something similar or may be going through something similar, I think that hearing this and just hearing your experience and hearing you on the other side standing tall is huge.
And honestly, I would do it all again in a heartbeat. Even looking back on that day in the car when I asked him if he would marry me again, I would absolutely marry him again, because the lessons learned from this far outweigh the negatives. He gave me the two greatest gifts he could have ever given me. And the way I look at it is I got the best parts of him already. And those are his kids and my kids. So whatever is left is for him to figure out and for him to work through on his own. And I sincerely wish him all the happiness in the world. I'm not sorry that it's not with me. You know, he has to go on his own journey to figure out who he is as a man and where he wants to go in life. I'm not angry with her. I thought that I would be more angry with her based off how, you know, she initially has treated me and based off the things that she said and that communication about me and someone that she had never met. I thought I would be more angry with her, but at the end of the day, when I lay my head down at night, I realize I'm not in the wrong here, and it's not my place to be angry with someone that's clearly going through something. It's my job to pray for them, and it's my job to hope that the two of them find that happiness that they're looking for. And I don't hold any ill will against her. I will always continue to make jokes at her expense because I've earned that. but at the end of the day, like, the most important thing is that everyone learned something from this experience. And I pray for her, and I hope that one day she's able to see the error of her ways in the situation as well as he is. And that it wasn't just a marriage that broke up. It was a family, but they're both 100% responsible for their own actions. But I don't wish anybody any ill will. I just want the best for all parties. Yeah.
Well, you're incredible. Honestly, your grace in this situation blows me away. I know that I just continue to essentially say that same thing over and over, but it's true. And it is just astounding. And I don't mean to say that in a way that perhaps sounds as shocked as it is, because that's not a reflection on you and my being surprised by how you specifically would handle it.
am just amazed by you and impressed by you. And again, so thankful to you for sharing your story and trusting me with it. And I just love you. I think you're awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, that's one thing that I just pride myself on is just being so gracious and so dignified, especially with the amount of wine I consume on a daily basis.
Well, you don't get to be the Chardonnay Madre without doing that. Can you take us out with your favorite quote?
Well, yeah. So it's definitely Dolly. That's kind of been my mantra these last several months is, you know, if you want the rainbow, you got to put up with the rain. And that's something that really speaks to me at this present stage. And, you know, if it's good enough for Dolly, honestly, it's good enough for all of us.
Thank you again, Paige, for candidly sharing your story with us. I know I'm not the only one praying for continued healing and brighter days ahead for your entire family. I also know I'm not the only one who enjoys Paige's humor just as much as her strength, so be sure to check her out at the Chardonnay Madre on Instagram for some laughs and some fantastic wine recommendations. We'll talk to you next week.